Hi, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. I'm Graham Couch, the Lansing State Journal, here alongside my colleague Chris Solari from the Detroit Free Press. It is Michigan State Football Week, the week that's usually full of trash talk and hope and for both sides and all that good stuff. It feels like a very different week, Chris. It feels like there is one side that would just assume this week just ends, goes away. Maybe this game isn't played. Maybe Michigan State can pull a play out of the Michigan playbook and have a COVID outbreak or something like that and get out of this game. And then there's a Michigan side that I don't even know. Like, I'm sure there are fans and players who will enjoy putting one on Michigan State, but I also don't think it's quite as much satisfaction as if it's a Michigan State team that isn't going through all the things that it's going through. It's not like this is some referendum on Mel Tucker's program, because Mel Tucker's gone. This is a transition anyway. It's a program that's in a rough spot. So, but the game will be played. How you doing?
I'm doing good. The game will be played.
Yeah.
I do think that last year's fight in the tunnel does add something to this. But, man, I mean, every year we're talking about some sort of shenanigans, whether it be the spike in the field, whether it be Devin Bush scuffing things up. I remember back in like 08 or 09, there being pushing and shoving with Michigan coming out of the tunnel and running into the Michigan State players on the sideline. And then here we are Thursday, a little more than 48 hours before the night game kickoff, and a story leaks to national sources that Michigan's being investigated for sign stealing by the NCAA, which, man, the shenanigans are starting. And, you know, it's been a week of dealing with Urban Meyer rumors. It's been a weird time. I don't know if there's anything I think right now that's creating the interest for Michigan State fans. It's the coaching search situation. And that probably is a little bit of an elixir or a numbing agent in some ways to what this game might look like on Saturday, because I do think Jim Harbaugh is going to try and put up as many points as possible. I mean, he put up 50 plus the last 2 weeks, and they're looking to do that again. Just a weird rivalry week. Weird.
Well, and I think Michigan State fans probably feel a little torn. There are some of them who do not want to be there in person. Many of them probably don't want to see this up close and in person. But they also feel like if you're not there, if you let the stadium get overrun by Michigan fans, then you're just part of the problem. You're not really doing your part. And you want to not abandon the players. Enough people have sort of done that to this point this season, from their own collective at SD4L which is throwing a tailgate tomorrow, which is weird, to their head coach, which put himself in a situation that got him removed and changes everything about the trajectory of their careers at MSU. It'll be fascinating, first of all, to see what the crowd is like at Spartan Stadium, Chris. I mean, I can see a scenario where it's, more than 50,000 of the fans at the beginning are Michigan State fans. I think people will try to turn out. We're going to get into a little bit of basketball news and basketball talk later. And, I think the basketball scrimmage that is happening at 2:30 at Breslin Center on Saturday would not be happening if Michigan State were 5-1, if Mel Tucker hadn't been fired. This is Izzo, trying to do his part to incentivize people to be on campus and go to the game. So we'll see what it looks like. I can also see a scenario where in the second half, there are more Michigan fans than Michigan State fans here or at Spartan Stadium. Those are the voices you hear, and it's sort of an ugly, remembered game, much like, say, Michigan State basketball in 2000 at Chrysler Center or something like that. Those sort of settings that go down in history. It'll be interesting to see who turns out and what it feels like, and whether Michigan State can keep this competitive enough so it doesn't get truly ugly.
Yeah, and that's the key. I mean, you have to, that's last year's game. A lot of people thought was going to turn into what the Indiana game was last week for Michigan. And they thought that Michigan was going to steamroll MSU in Ann Arbor. And they stayed in the game. And they stayed in the game deep into the game, quite honestly. I mean, you know, Michigan scored 16 second-half points to pull away to that 29-7 win. But it wasn't a knife, the hot knife through butter like a lot of people anticipated that to be. And I think it's going to be interesting as well because, I mean, just peeking out at the weather right now, it looks like rain is expected. It looks like it's going to be cold and drizzly, kind of like you. Apparently everybody but the TV executives and major market don't realize can be the case at this point in the year in the upper Midwest, which, you know, I mean, honestly, this might end up like the 2015 Nebraska game that, by the end of the game with the night game and everything and being cold, rainy, drizzly, miserable, that nobody's left in the stands. I mean, if it goes awry, I mean, if one team's up big or if it's not a competitive game at all, I mean, you know, everybody could be looking for shelter.
Yeah, I enjoy the fact that TV is ruined part of college football. TV executive meaning power.
Part of
a lot of college, yeah, a lot of college football. It's going to hurt the sport overall as fewer fan bases have hope. And I understand they're getting what they want because, you know, a year from now, Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA can be part of these different, you know, key television slots.
Big Ten after dark, baby.
But I do love that the TV money and the TV networks are having to suffer through some Iowa, Wisconsin, and some struggling Big Ten football because, you know, what we all know is that the interest in football is created by all these little fan bases. It's not the level of play itself. There aren't actually enough good games throughout the country week after week at a high enough level in college football to justify what they're probably doing. And, I do love watching the network suffer a little bit right now with games that aren't.
I will tell you my least favorite phrase in the lexicon right now for college sports is inventory. And that's unfortunate that the administrators at the athletic and above level at the universities have relegated themselves to being television inventory. Because these games aren't game like this. A rivalry game like this, sure, it's going to be great to have it in prime time, and it's not about the prime time slot for this kind of game. I mean, if you got this kind of game, sure, but you know, think about what was the last night game? Was the Maryland game?
Yeah, well, they're that's what I mean. Next year, when they get better opponent, they're going to get better people, you know, better teams in next year, and it'll. They'll get more of what they want, and the only way this is ever going to be worth it at the end is if, and I don't think most schools will do this, but if schools can show that they have truly improved the student-athlete experience with, you know, all sorts of non-rev upgrades and all that stuff, if it just becomes about bells and whistles for football players, then yeah, this was all needless and greedy. Okay, so let's get into the game. Michigan State. There's zero evidence, I think we can both agree to this point, that Michigan State can beat Michigan. Nothing that's happened yet, and I know Michigan hasn't played anybody, but Michigan State isn't in anybody. So this doesn't really – Michigan State doesn't separate itself from the teams Michigan's beaten in the Big Ten. I think that the thing that stands out is Michigan is the least penalized team in the country at like 17.9 yards a game. Michigan State is the most penalized team in the Big Ten at like 66. It's almost a full drive. It's lots of key downs. All the way up to the procedure penalty that led to the repunt against Rutgers that led to that whole debacle last week. And when you have one team that has an identity, one team that has discipline and focus, and the other team has none of those things, and then you've got a talent gap, it's just not going to happen. So suspending belief, though, how does this happen? And how does Michigan State keep it competitive?
Just to kind of point to that, because I had actually broken this down a little bit, Michigan has 123 penalty yards on the entire season. and they've got 16 flags for basically 7.7 yards a flag. Michigan State has 396 penalty yards on 45 flags, and that's 8.8 yards per penalty. So you're talking over a yard of difference right there between them. And, you know, that makes a difference. That makes a big difference, especially if the frequency is going, right? I mean, I thought Michigan State last week at Rutgers did a great job of eliminating the penalties that they had on the offense and the defense. Where it cost them was on the special teams, where they had three penalties, including that one right before the punt, including another one on a kickoff that got re-kicked and Jordan Hall got hurt on. Those penalties have a lot of factors in a game, especially when you add up little things like that that happen. So how does Michigan State overcome that? Well, first of all, they got to play a much more disciplined game, which they haven't shown the ability to do. They've got to be able to generate some things down the field, which even though Caden Hauser threw the ball up and drew some pass interference calls against Rutgers, his longest completion was the 13-yard touchdown to Montori Foster. That's not going to get it done. And you got to do something in the ground, because we all know that the ground game, historically over the last 53 meetings, 46 times, the team that won the battle on the ground ends up winning this game. And Michigan State's averaging, I think, like 117 yards or so a game, and it's, you know, in the hundreds of the 130 teams in the Football Bowl subdivision. So not a lot of things line up. So you need some sort of magic some way. And I will say this, though. After the Washington game, I was surprised with how, and again, it goes back to the opponents they're playing, because, you know, they did a good job, I thought, against Tagovailoa and Maryland. Then they get a backup quarterback against Iowa and did what they needed to do, held them under 250 yards. Last week, it's a rainy condition with Wimsett, and for the most, up until the fourth quarter, they were stifling them. So you need your defense to kind of keep playing at the level that and increasing tenacity that they've shown since the Washington game, because if you even come close to half of that, Michigan runs away with this.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're looking for hope, and it's partly in the idea that Michigan State's defense has actually been okay. I think they've been timely in their aggression. There've been some promising signs there. That nobody has really made Michigan uncomfortable yet. And if you could somehow do that, you'd test them in ways they haven't been tested. And I'm talking about their offense. I don't know if MSU is capable of that. But on the offensive side of the ball, I think Michigan State is a truly average, middling Big Ten offense. The stats bear it out. They were worse than that for a while with Noah Kim at center. But the argument that they're going to need is that, look, Caden Hauser last week led them on, you know, they had three touchdowns, the five trips in the red zone, scored four times, three of them touchdowns, just a lot better at sort of punching it in, right? And that's, they're going to, like, they may get five real opportunities to score in this game if they're lucky, if things go well. They're going to need to, at minimum, and this is if you create turnovers on the other end, and if Michigan has some things that don't go well, at minimum 27-plus points, right? You're going to have to get out of those five real scoring opportunities, probably more than that considerably. But let's just say, like, if you're lower than that, you got no shot. And so last week they showed some evidence of being able to do that. The problem for MSU is that, like, Michigan has some dudes that, you know, are difference makers on offense, including their offensive line, which allows those guys to cook, so to speak. And MSU just doesn't have guys that make the defense go, oh boy. Like Nathan Carter, really good back, right? I don't think anybody's doubting that. But he's not Kenneth Walker, who can do it out of nothing. Like, he's a good back. He'd be good, and he'd put up big numbers if he played at Michigan. You know, there are receivers that I think part of the problem Michigan State has too is that its upperclassmen receivers are pretty average, and their ceiling is pretty low, and they're solid. They'd be great as third guys or, you know, second guys if you had a truly dynamic dude, but they don't. But they're good enough right now to take away a lot of the snaps, and they're better than the young guys who haven't really turned into anything yet. And I don't know that Jaron Glover and Terrell Henry and Antonio Gates Jr. will ever be dynamic dudes, but we don't know what they'll become, at least. I think we know what Montori Foster Jr. is. We know what Trey Mosley is. Solid players in the Big Ten, but that's it. And they're not gonna be difference makers in a game like this. I do think a guy like Malik Carr, who was really good against Iowa for a little while before he got hurt, like somebody like that is going to have a game where he's a problem for Michigan, because Michigan State doesn't have anybody that's a problem for other teams right now.
Nobody knew who Ricky White was in 2020. That's my right. Counter to that. I mean, you know, that, and really nobody knew who Ricky White is after that Michigan game that year. I mean, he disappeared from the roster to dubious situations and ends up at UNLV. And, you know, but he and Rocky Lombardi attacked Michigan's secondary down the field that day all day. And
bad Michigan secondary.
Bad Michigan secondary. And, you know, I think that's one thing. I think you kind of mentioned, and I think, first of all, you kind of touching on point by point some of the things you said. One, Michigan's offensive line is really good and really strong, and their run game with Corum and Edwards and McCarthy is dynamic, and they saw that last year. I think they had 276 yards against Michigan State, but that front seven is Michigan State's defensive strength. So I think there's a little strength on strength there. Simeon Barrow got banged up again last week. Derek Harmon at one point took a shot to the head, but kept playing through it in the fourth quarter. So they've got dudes in the middle. We still don't know about the edge rushers. I mean, Brandon Wright had a sack in that game, but you know, the sack numbers had been down in the previous games until last week when they got Wimsatt. So I think there's a little strength on strength there. Mentioning Carter, I flashed back to talking to him. I think it was maybe even in the spring. It might have been before the season. But remember, last year, Michigan knocked him out for the rest of the season with his shoulder injury when he was at UConn. And he told us a story that his dream in high school was to go and play running back at Michigan and never got an offer. So this is his chance to go against it. So that there's incentive and motivation for a guy like that, even if he hasn't played in the rivalry, even if he's not from the state. I think that having Jalen Berger come back last week, though, I mean, you saw Rutgers really bottled up Carter. They focused their attention on Carter. He averaged about 2.5 yards a carry. But Berger showed some burst, and Berger showed some power running through some things. If you can get the 1-2 punch on the ground, and, you know, they did it for three quarters against Rutgers, different defense altogether. I understand that. And still a solid to above average Big Ten defense. And they were able to move the ball well on the ground. They disappeared in the fourth quarter like the rest of the offense, but that's how you got to do it. I mean, you got to try and extend your possessions to keep Michigan's offense off the field, because if it's three and out like it was in the fourth quarter, the way that Rutgers eliminated that 18-point lead in a hurry is going to look like it was moving in slow motion compared to what Michigan's offense could do on the other end.
Michigan State's going to have to be something they haven't been, you know, and Michigan's going to have to be something they haven't been. And so
we've seen that in the rivalry, though.
We have, but not to this extent. Like, there is no upset in the history of the rivalry that I can find. And, I was kind of going back through just to kind of make sure when I said that. Because I don't think when Michigan State's ever pulled it off, when they've been in this position, have there been this sort of dynamics in the team at this sort of place. And Michigan as high as they are. You know what I mean? Like, when you find those two things at work at once, it hasn't really actually happened. Like, when Michigan's been, you know, you can go to 1990. There are times where Michigan's been ranked really high, 99, all that stuff. Michigan State's either been really good or at least in a good competitive place, right? And there just aren't times where Michigan State's been, like, this down on its luck, Michigan this high on itself, and it happened. And that's just all in all the dynamics there. I just
maybe that 93 game.
Yeah, but even their ranking Michigan, wasn't quite.
Yeah, I mean, the Michigan
quite that
Michigan team wasn't that good, and they had lost. I mean, at that point, it was earlier in the season. They had already lost to Notre Dame, but they lost in East Lansing and then lost two of their next three after that. You know, but that's maybe the comparative that I could see. But I mean, even that 2012 game, even that 2016 game were both relatively competitive games.
Yeah, but 2012, that Michigan State team was an elite defense. I mean, this
that's true. I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, I'm just saying, like,
Michigan wasn't elite. Yeah.
Regardless of that, you know, the rivalry does tend to bring out emotions and make teams and players elevate to a level that they have yet to show.
No, you're right. And I do think something this week that's not promising for the rest of the year, like if you're looking for a betting line to take Minnesota next week, because Michigan State sounded like early 90s, early 2000s MSU this week. And like listening to Dylan Tatum and Trey Mosley, it's this concept, and I got into this in the column I wrote today, but just how far this has changed in 2 years. But you listen to these guys and it's like, you know, this is the game. You can be 0-30. You win this game. It makes your season. It ruins theirs. Like, that is not the talk. I mean, D'Antonio obviously prioritizes rivalry, but what made the D'Antonio era special was what they did the week after the Michigan games, right, in terms of taking care of business. And so
two things, that and the elimination of the retaliatory penalties that plagued Perlis, John L. Smith, Nick Saban, Bobby Williams, everybody. I mean, Boach Schembechler for many years preached to those guys to get under the Michigan State players' skin and let them respond. And that's something that D'Antonio from the outset set to drum out of the program. And more than anything, as much as we talked about the discipline of coming back after the next week, after the Michigan game, that was something he did in that game that oftentimes ended up being a difference. Don't retaliate. And can this team do that? Derek Harmon took a late hit. I think it was last week. I mean, other guys have had late hits throughout the season, Adelaide. So there needs to be not just a premium on it, but an absolute emphasis that this is the week and this is the game in particular that you cannot have retaliatory penalties. You have to have mental strength and fortitude to prevent yourself from costing you. And that's where the penalty things that we talked about comes in. You can't have a 5-yard penalty turn into a 15-yard penalty or 30 yards in penalty with two 15-yarders on a play.
100%. I mean, they're going to have to be, you know, and so maybe because they're dialed in all week, you know, that'll, and I do think it helps that they're playing this game this week. Not that may change Saturday, but what I mean is, after what happened at Rutgers and where their mind was and how deflating that was, you now have a game that's a season all on its own. I think it helps for this week in terms of, you know, preparation and focus and all that sort of stuff. And these are, you know, still college kids. Still, I mean, there is still an unpredictability to even the most disciplined and predictable good teams, right? This is still college football. Even the NFL is unpredictable, but you know there's a difference in terms of the age of these kids. So you never know. Michigan State, I think, would have to do something at some point that makes Michigan's offense look flustered and feel flustered, and not just like for a drive or two, like into the game where things aren't going well and they haven't been in that spot yet and this team's not rolling over and the crowd starts to murmur and it's like, well, wait a second, what's going on here? You know, and I don't think Michigan State's completely devoid of talent. I think if they just had, though, you know, if you think about upsets Michigan State has had, even in games that weren't quite like this, they have had guys that truly were NFL dudes, you know, either at receiver or running back or wherever. And or they've had, some guys on defense that and they may have some, you know, the defensive backfield may be the one area that some of those young guys are turning into some really good players. And that's that's something, you know, but they're not there yet either, really.
I'll tell you something else that needs to absolutely improve that can't happen is the porous tackling. I mean, the inability to tackle cost them in that fourth quarter against Rutgers, and it's been a problem all season. You got to wrap up these dudes. They'll run over through you and leave you in the turf.
You know, there's no doubt. This is going to have to be the best game. So that MSU's played and then some, and I just don't think it's going to happen. Before we move on from that, what is your prediction? Like, how ugly will this be? Like, give me best case scenario, worst case scenario, and then actual prediction.
I think worst case scenario is Harbaugh uses this game like the Dolphins did a couple weeks ago and just keeps going, and nothing MSU can do to stop it because he won't pull off. I don't think he'll pull off the gas at all, knowing what happened last year, knowing everything, especially now with these allegations that have come up. If they've got a chance to stomp, they're going to want to say and tell everybody in the country, doesn't matter about signs that other teams are doing, we're just this good. Worst case scenario is like a 70-point performance by Michigan. Best case scenario for MSU is you get some resolve on defense, you cause some turnovers, set your offense up with short field, minimize the things that Hauser has to do as a quarterback, but get some big plays from him. Those are the things I think if you want to pull an upset, you got to keep that score in the 20s. I just don't see it happening. I've got Michigan winning 52-10. I mean, they've just been on such a run here the last couple weeks against Big Ten opponents and just building and building and building to this game that I think it's just going to be hard to stop that kind of steamroller that they've got going right now.
Worst case scenario, it winds up like, you know, it hits 60, right? It's like 60-6, 60-3. It doesn't matter. If the one side hits 60, right? That's the worst case scenario, right? That it's like sort of epic, legendary.
Not if it's 63-60, and we've seen some of those games in the South.
No, in the Mid-American Conference, for those of you who play a drinking game when I bring that up. I've covered regular season games that were 66-63. So, or not regular season, regulation games, rather, that were 66-63. So I think that's sort of the worst case scenario, that it just spirals, that it gets ugly, that MSU's heads drop, that Michigan is just focused and dialed in on creating as much pain as possible. I think the best case scenario for Michigan State really is sort of a, realistically, obviously, and obviously, you know, weird things could happen, but a 31-10 loss that maybe isn't ever really in doubt, but doesn't feel embarrassing and just looks like two programs at a little different place, and it is what it is, and there's not a whole lot of bragging rights that come with that because Michigan State's in a place where it is, and Michigan's got bigger fish to fry, and so be it. Everybody moves on. This is probably the end of Michigan State season in some ways, but it's not humiliation. I think my actual prediction is going to be, you know, 40-10 in that range, and a game that, you know, I don't know where, you know, I just find it. There's just no, like, statistical evidence, no physical. I mean, there's just nothing that points to this game being competitive other than the history of the rivalry, you know, the pride of MSU's players, and that I do think they have enough seasoned talent not to just get obliterated if they play smart and play well. But 40-10 to me is not obliterated. 40-10 is sort of a blowout that matches where these two teams are right now.
Yeah, compared to what Michigan's done the last couple weeks in the Big Ten. I will say this, though. The new clock rules are more than likely going to prevent this from being the worst game in the history of the rivalry, which happened in 1902 when Michigan won 119-0. So I'm going to throw that out there. That's not a scenario I think is going to happen.
The question for you, Chris, if you and I are starting on either line in 1902, are we all Americans? Because I think we might have been. That's the thing. That's no offense to those still.
I don't know. I still think that you've got the height. I don't. I think I would have struggled to block. I mean, I'm not a Steve Grinzel type offensive lineman here.
The problem is there are no rules that, and I would have been scared for my life in that era of college football, and at some point just decided, screw it, I'm leaving. So that would have been bad for my play as well.
I don't think even in 1902, current day us would have been on the field with those guys. So,
I would have asked to wear modern day pads if I was on the field with those guys back then. All right, so. Obviously, the big thing with MSU football right now is the coaching search. I think one of the weird things with this, and obviously you hear a lot of talk about, you know, Urban Meyer and then you hear other names or whatever it might be. It's just this bizarre run-up that is longer than you're ever going to see in coaching searches, where a team gets almost a full season to decide on, choose, and go after, and it leads to a lot of speculation and hope and other things. And Urban Meyer, to be frank, he is the guy who's not coaching right now. So I understand the allure of him because he is the guy who I think would put the most fear into Michigan fans and Michigan as a program, because they know what he did to them. It would say the most about MSU's program that these guys are serious about things. I still don't think it'll happen. And that doesn't mean I buy the reporting either that he's not into coaching. Of course he's going to say that now. If he's at an economic luncheon or if he's talking to Bruce Feldman, who's, you know, of course he's not going to say, yes, I'm taking that job. If he says he's interested in the MSU job, he's probably got a less chance of taking the MSU job. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's not how this works. So don't worry about anything else. I don't think it'll be him. But I also don't think MSU is at the place right now where they are. It's going to be a slower process because it's such a run-up. You know, anything you hear from until mid-November, I would just caution that, you know, it's preliminary.
Unless that Hail Mary comes to fruition in the next 48 hours and he's announced as the head coach at halftime.
That could happen. You never know. So anyway, I don't want to spend a lot of time in the coaching search. We could do that every.
You know, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but, you know, I mean, what's listen, even having Urban Meyer's name linked to this job in any fashion right now for this program has kept this job on the forefront of people's lips nationally. And that's an important thing, because it's not people saying, okay, look how dysfunctional Michigan State is. Look how much this group or that group or this person or that person has caused this university to be in such a state of disarray, right? You got a little bit of hope, a little bit of sunshine saying, oh, Urban Meyer's interested in the job. Urban Meyer may be interested in a job. Urban Meyer wants the job. I mean, what does that do? It gets you away from talking about the Mel Tucker situation, that's for sure.
Well, and the other thing is the top boosters want him. And so that's interesting. So, you know, there should be some pushback against sort of the national narrative that, oh, MSU could never have Urban Meyer. Well, you know, or that's just, you know, a bunch of fans who want that. No, I mean, there are people who have deep pockets who want Urban Meyer. And so if that's the case, that makes the storyline have, you know, more legs than it would if it was just, hey, that would be fun, you know, from people on Twitter. So, I mean, I get it. And I, you know, I'm one of those people who likes to throw cold water on things I don't think are reasonable. But I also, when I watch MSU get kicked around because people love to pile on MSU, I get a little like, all right, that's enough. Simmer down, you know, let back off. You know, you don't need the national folks coming in with their, you know, irrelevant existence and weighing in just because they feel the need to with a decent platform. Did that sound mean? I didn't mean for it to sound.
I mean, you're going after the national folks. That's part of the drinking game with the Western Michigan MAC, South Dakota State. I mean, I think that qualifies for that. But I will say, listen, this job has its issues. I mean, Mel Tucker, even this summer, knowing what was coming, talked about people saying he shouldn't take this job. That, I mean, that still resonates in coaching circles, right? So, you know, the thing I think is, what's the word I'm looking for here? If you're Michigan State, who at the university right now is sitting back and saying, do we want a coach who, if we're dangling all this money, is only coming for the paycheck? Because we've already gone through that in some ways. Or does do we have a coach that is wholly and fully bought in to what we want to be as a university, not just a football program or an athletic department? I don't know if there's anybody at Michigan State that's saying that right now to the donors, to the athletic department, or anybody, because there's such a leadership vacuum over there.
No, and it can't be a Matt Ishbia run program, you know, where he's going to trade for Kevin Durant at every opportunity, and that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't, so to speak.
And maybe that's where college football's headed. Maybe college sports in general is headed that route. But if it is headed that route, it's not right now. It's not there right now. So there is still that connection to the academic side, to the university side, to the community side, you know, until it's 100% semi-pro sports, as opposed to right now being partially pro sports. You know, there needs to be someone in power that's kind of not necessarily pumps the brakes, but does the due diligence that wasn't there the last time around.
And I think with Urban Meyer, this can't be MSU fawning over him. It has to be him really wanting it. It would have to be him.
Yeah. Do you want the job or do you want a paycheck? Do you want to pad your bank account? I don't know. I mean, that's who's making that ultimate judgment call.
Well, the interview is, and you have to hear that, and it'll be, you know, and it should be also, you know, it's what do you want your legacy to be? Is there an understanding that some people here will find this hiring problematic, and are you willing to talk to those people ahead of time? You know, like there are things where, you know, it's not as simple as you know, you hire him, you win, everybody's happy.
Here's what also needs to be understood. Are you getting Jordan coming back with the Bulls, or are you getting Jordan coming back with the Wizards? Are you getting a guy that has his fastball still? Because the game has changed. I mean, you don't know that. You really, because there's no body of work to say that Urban Meyer has and can do this in the current climate with NIL, with transfer portal, with guys leaving. You just don't know that. So there are some unknowns, even with his resume and pedigree.
My issues with Urban Meyer have a lot more to do with the fact that, you know, he's going to have to answer for the idea that he knew that there was a wife abuser on his staff and didn't tell the truth about it, right? And didn't disclose it and was suspended for it. And there are, given the climate at MSU, given that they just got rid of their coach for sexual misconduct, like, you know, having something that's, you know, having violence against a spouse being something that you didn't disclose, that you were aware of, that you, and it's not that he condoned it. It's not, you know, but that is something he is going to have to at least understand, that some people aren't going to be comfortable with that hire, right? And I think MSU fans have to understand that there will be people on campus who aren't comfortable with that hire. Some people say, screw it, just win. But there is an argument. If you're talking about leading young men and examples at a university, if none of that stuff matters, then shut it all down. I mean, we're already at a tipping point where what's the point of college sports, really? I mean, really, a major college sport, should they exist? Should they really exist? Think about it. Like, they exist for our joy, but are they really, you know, if you're just going to ignore everything else, and I'm not saying Urban Meyer's past necessarily disqualifies him. I'm just saying he needs to be aware that there will be people that makes uncomfortable, and he can't be uncomfortable understanding that and bringing it up. And I think if he handled it right, if he really wanted the job, he could have it. We talked a lot about Urban Meyer. I didn't plan to do that. I apologize.
I'll go a different route, and I won't even go to that side of it, you know, because I think there's going to be that hand-wringing argument about those situations at Ohio State and whatever happened in his personal life. I'm going just straightly from the football standpoint. When you had a group of players and an organization in Jacksonville that basically mocked and belittled your approach and culture to running that program in an era where college programs are becoming more professional and athletes have agents and representatives who are talking and finding out things that are going on. You can't have that same kind of autocratic dictatorship that he had at Ohio State, Florida, Utah, Bowling Green. It's just a different climate. You have to have more of a professional approach, and he failed at that. He failed at that in Jacksonville to really treat the players that he had like grown men who were coming to work every day. And that, to me, from a football standpoint, based on how the shift has happened within the game and within the college structure in the last 2 to 3 years, I mean, kids are – I mean, just look at the Caleb Williams situation. The kid's demanding ownership to be drafted by an NFL team. These guys have business on their minds. This is more than just love of alma mater, rah, rah, sis, boom, bah. Now, these guys are getting paid.
Doesn't mean he wouldn't win a lot more than Lance Leopold would, and I understand why that, you know, hire is more exciting than something like that. The other thing is, before we get into basketball, What is SD4L doing having this tailgate? Like, they're just, I mean, they tweeted out, join us for, you know, for a free event right before the Michigan State football game, MSU Hoops meet and greet. Let's take this movement to another.
Yeah, to announce the hiring of Urban Meyer.
Yeah, take this movement to another level. I hope they understand that that brand has to go away. Like, there's no coming back for that brand. And whatever emerges and is the collective for Michigan State will not be known as SD4L. I do hope they understand that.
I mean, they're not paying most of the players anymore, so got to use the money somewhere.
I guess. All right, let's talk some hoops here. Guys at the SD4L are paying. The news is Jackson Kohler, foot injury.
Big loss.
People upset when, you know, or people always say, you know, it's not an MSU basketball season without a foot injury. And you know what? To be fair to people, there do seem to be quite a few of them. But there are a lot of stress fractures in college basketball. That's just the way it is.
I'm going to put this out here. You've had two chances now to go after Phil Knight. Here's another one.
I'm not a huge fan of Nikes. And if I were a sweatshop worker in another country and I was making a Nike shoe, I would probably sabotage it, and so you never know when that sort of thing could be the cause of something. But that's my own take. My players would not be wearing Nikes if I were at a school.
Graham is all for the New Balance, or is that right? Is it New Balance?
Made in Maine, as right. far as I know, or Bangladesh, and just they tell us it's Maine. One of the two,
Bangor, Bangladesh, kind of close.
could be anywhere. And obviously, there are two ways to look at it. It stinks for Jackson Kohler. I think it stinks for MSU's team in the sense that I was intrigued to see what he could offer them. I think offensively, he perhaps provided a wrinkle this year that we were going to see that was one other weapon MSU would have. I also think that this is a team now, and that's a position where MSU is actually equipped to handle it, where they wouldn't have been a year ago, not with him specifically, but they've got some depth at center. They've got some experience there. Mati Sissoko, obviously. Carson Cooper's the guy who I think has the highest ceiling of their centers. And so you've got two guys. There's some role definition now. It'll be those two. You know, you'll have Booker backing up Malik Hall at the four. And you've got some role clarity at the beginning of the season. It stinks for Kohler because those injuries often alter an entire season. It's hard to work your way back in. It'll be interesting to see if he is somebody that plays more than a third of the season. My guess is he will, because even if they use him sparingly or whatever, you know, they'll get to the postseason and he'll want to. But you could always, you know, spare that year, so to speak, if things didn't come back as quickly as they wanted. But it stinks for him, nonetheless.
Yeah, and you know, I thought they would have had a nice offense defensive blend with him and Sissoko, because I Kohler really reshaped his body in the summer. I mean, it was noticeable, and you could see
impressive,
that he was not just lighter, but lighter on his feet, which I think helps with the kind of offensive game, the up and under moves that he has, the ability to, I mean, he was a little more chiseled in the upper bodies to go through contact. So now you put that 2 months plus behind in the development curve. That's a tough loss. And, you know, they say it's not a season ending injury and they anticipate him back in December, but we've seen those things linger, and we've seen, if particularly the last few years, even just looking back to the situation with Malik Hall last year, they erred on the side of caution with him and allowed him to get back, worried more about February, March, and beyond rather than, you know, those late December, early January games, but different kind of players, different experience levels. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's going to put a lot, I think, on Xavier Booker to kind of, and I don't know if, and that's, I think, going to be an interesting test for him mentally. He doesn't have to live up to the five-star, but he has to live up to the expectations of what Tom Izzo wants.
But I don't know that it changes anything for Booker. Like, so here would be my counter to that, is that basically you had three guys mostly vying for, you know, minutes at center. And it was going to be interesting to see how it played out. And now for a month and a half at least, you're going to have two guys, both capable, perhaps taking the...
One, a guy who was a late add last year.
Yeah, but he's also, I mean, Carson Cooper's going to play in the league, I think. Like, Carson Cooper is, now this is just my own, I think Carson Cooper is the most likely of their three centers to be a pillar, to be a main guy. Like, I think he's got the highest ceiling at that position.
He's got athleticism.
In terms of all-around game. Yeah, in terms of all-around game and skill. He does, you know, doesn't have the offensive creativity and savvy that Jackson Kohler does, but he's good hands. He runs the floor like a deer. He's long. He's gotten a lot stronger.
He's not someone though who we've seen be able to create his own offense in the post, whereas Kohler could.
Right, but Kohler didn't do a ton of that. Right. No, they lose something. There's no question they lose something. And, you know, and I think if you were looking at Malik Hall 25 minutes a game and Xavier Booker 15 at power forward or something like that, that doesn't really necessarily change a ton. It just changes the possibilities, because what we didn't know was, as you brought up there, you know, I mean, he did remake his body. He was stronger. I think Kohler really had an understanding of what it was going to take for him with some of his physical limitations athletically to be a factor in the Big Ten. I think he had discovered that last year. And he had really worked to put himself in a position to do that. And you just wonder, with a guy who's going to be off his feet for a little while, like, you know, what, how much he'll lose, how much this year just winds up being a lost cause, what he'll be able to provide them when he comes back, and what sort of things are already, you know, does Carson Cooper sort of take that job at some point and run with it a little more? Who knows? They can't now afford another injury there.
Right. That's exactly what I was going to say next, is that, you know, I mean, we saw it last year with the Hall situation. You absolutely can't afford another injury right now with because what you did to increase your depth now has been chipped away by one guy.
Michigan State has a scrimmage at 2:30 Saturday afternoon before the football game. Then they have an exhibition game,
where they're going to announce Urban Meyer as head coach. Or they're going to bring him out and tease it and then hire him at halftime. Or maybe the contract signing will be happening. Who knows? Who knows what it's going to be? They're going to get creative, right?
An exhibition game next Wednesday against Hillsdale. Then they have the Maui relief game on the next Sunday afternoon at Breslin. Lots of opportunities for people to see this men's basketball team before the season officially starts. That's what makes the scrimmage so obvious in terms of trying to help the football team out. It's like, wait a second, you just had Midnight Madness. You've got a Wednesday and Sunday home exhibitions, and you're doing a Saturday old school, you know, green and white game like it's 1996. I respect it. It's a pretty obvious play, and it's Izzo trying to help out the football vibe. We will have complete coverage of all of it, of the hoops, of the football, if you want to read it still, and everything. And we'll come back next week, talk about the Michigan game, talk about some hoops and all that. We'll have complete coverage at LSJ.com, at Freep.com, at greenandwhite.com. As always, thanks for listening. You can rate, subscribe, just give us 5 stars and then leave whatever review you actually want to do.
Please don't steal our signs.
Don't steal our signs, if you don't mind. We appreciate you. This has been a production. It's a production of the Lansing State Journal, the Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. Thanks for listening.